I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, back after a bit of a hiatus. I took a couple of weeks off. I do some work outside of the station here with insurance on the heels of Hurricane Ian. We had a little bit of work to do, so I've been out of town. I want to thank Stephen Utroska and Alan Ramsey, who filled in for me over the past couple of weeks. It was kind of interesting to be away from it. I've taken one vacation, I believe, since I have been here for about 5.5 years. I took 1 week off to go to the Bahamas. Outside of that, I think I've been here just about every day. As we know, I don't take sick days because I don't get sick. So it was actually very odd to be away from the show for a couple of weeks. I didn't know how long this work was going to last. And I started to keep up with the news as I was gone, but I found that I really couldn't handle it without an outlet like this show. I was surrounded by about 100 other people, all strangers. I think I knew 2 of the people out of this group. Nobody wanted to hear me pontificate about the Federal Reserve or the war in Ukraine. So I found that as I looked at the news, these thoughts that I had on what was going on rattling around in my head were frustrating, I guess is a way to put it. So I pretty much kind of tuned out of the news most I could. I was busy anyway, so it was hard to keep up with things. But I am glad to be back. I'm interested to see what's going to happen in the midterms. I cannot believe that the GOP is not running away with what's going on right now. But we'll see more on as that comes about. It's, everyone knows I'm not a two-party guy. I realize that winning in the midterms, any kind of a red wave in the midterms, is a way to maybe stop some of the water that this ship of state is taking on, but in no way, shape, or form fixes anything. But we will we'll be watching that. I'm kind of glad to be here as it's taking place. As I say, it was interesting. I spent 2 weeks with about 100 different strangers. I knew just a couple of people there. We did not talk a lot about politics. There was one girl on the opening day of this that any time she got a chance to say it, she said, "Well, I hope this shows everybody that climate change is real." Talking about this one particular hurricane to which I just bit my tongue. I didn't really feel the need to say, "You understand these hurricanes are not new." But she was convinced of that. But it was just interesting. I would get into conversations with people. We would talk about other work that we did and what we did, and I would explain to people that I've been hosting a radio show, and they would ask about it. And I told them to a person, I said, you know, I'm a libertarian guy, so I host a libertarian radio show because I can't stand the two-party system, and I think we've all been sold out by the political class in this country, and we're all paying the price for it. I didn't get one bit of backlash to that. Not one single person said, well, no, now the Democrats are great or the Republicans are great. And I met people who said that they were either liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican, but they all, to a person, acknowledged that the people that are running this show are massively corrupt. We owe them absolutely nothing, and they've made a mess out of everything. So it's just interesting. I know when they go away from me, these thoughts are easily taken out of people's heads, and they align themselves straight back into their tribe. I was watching some college football this weekend, and they did a shot of the crowd up in the stands. And you see the people that are yelling out to the field, come on, you know, whatever they're saying, they're making suggestions, they're cheering on their team. And it struck me as I was watching this one particular guy He was very animated and yelling. I don't know. He had seats probably about halfway up the first segment of stands there. And it struck me for just a moment. I said, that's our political system right there. Everybody thinks they're on a winning team. They're shouting out what they think. The teams aren't listening to you at all. Now, they can't hear you, obviously, in a big stadium situation. They really can't hear what you're saying, but you can shout out all the suggestions you want to Mississippi State in the middle of a game. They're not listening, nor do they care what you say. And so you've got a stadium full of people separated. Some are Kentucky fans, and some are Mississippi State fans. Some are Tennessee fans, and some are Alabama fans. And they're cheering on their team. But the teams now, there's much more purity and innocence to college football than there is to our political system. But basically, it's like the two political parties. You can shout and cheer and spend money with them. But ultimately, they really don't care what you think. They're going to do what they're going to do. So that was kind of interesting. But anyway, I am back with storm season here. We'll see if there's not another hurricane that could pull me away again. It was great to know that. Particularly, I think Stephen Utroska picked up a lot of the slack. I need to press him on pushing some more libertarian stuff. One of the things that was driving me crazy while I was gone, and I believe I'm going to have to spend some time on it, so it'll probably be for tomorrow's show, but Dennis Prager, who is a host that appears, on the WYAB late at night, he's got Prager University. There's a whole lot of things that Dennis Prager does. He's got some great material out there, some short, succinct, five-minute YouTube videos about the Constitution and markets and things like that that are really great things. I don't necessarily have a real beef with Dennis Prager, but in my series of taking on these people who are really denigrating libertarians, Dennis Prager has probably the worst one I've heard for a while. I need to pull down the audio and edit it a little bit so I can do it within constraints of time. But Dennis Prager, first it was Alex Jones and Steven Crowder. Alex Jones saying he is now anti-libertarian and that the Libertarian Party is a cancer. Steven Crowder, because he met some of the D.C. libertarians 12 years ago, who were going to vote for Barack Obama, he's decided the Libertarian Party is no good. Then we had Ben Shapiro coming out against the Libertarian Party, and now Dennis Prager came out, and I'm telling you, it's a hit job. It is one of the most condescending things I've ever heard in my entire life, so this was driving me crazy while I was gone when I heard this thing, but tomorrow I'll break down the Dennis Prager attack on libertarians. Some of it I actually kind of agree with. I kind of know where he's coming from, but his tone in delivering this thing was absolutely bizarre, and it is my suspicion that there has been a word that has been put out by the GOP, which really says, hey, these libertarians, people are really sick of the Republican Party, and libertarians are starting to gain some ground, and now there's some competent people running the Libertarian Party. They must be stopped. And so Dennis Prager did his bit on it, too. I believe this is coordinated. So we'll talk about that. It'll be tomorrow. That's quite a tease, but I'm just telling you, this is something that's been absolutely driving me nuts. I guess I'll go ahead and knock these out here. I've got my quotes of the day. I have a laundry list of these things. I continually run across them, and then I clip them and put them somewhere because I'm always fascinated by a good, succinct quote. Cicero said, any man can make mistakes, but only an idiot persists in his error. Draw your inferences there. That's the political system in a nutshell. We just keep doing the same things over and over and over again, expecting that any day now they'll ride to our rescue. The red wave, that'll fix it. Thomas Jefferson said, timid men prefer the calm of despotism to the boisterous sea of liberty. And we have a nation of timid men that are absolutely fine with what's going on in the federal government as long as our guys are the despots that are running things and stripping us of our income. JFK, Kennedy said, it's kind of amazing to think, what is this, 60 years ago? 60 years ago, a Democrat said this: today, we need a nation of Minutemen, citizens who are not only prepared to take arms, but citizens who regard the preservation of freedom as the basic purpose of their daily life and who are willing to consciously work and sacrifice for that freedom. That was JFK, in my opinion, the last real president of the United States before the coup on that afternoon in Dallas in 1963. And Shakespeare said, "Cowards die many times before their deaths. The valiant never taste of death but once." Yeah, a good fighting spirit. It adds a little something to life, I must say. That's what this show's about. When we come back, we're going to start as we normally do. We're going to take a look at the economy. That was the one thing I kind of kept up with because of just an absolute fascination and really trying to get some glimpse of where things are going, where my money should be heading to weather the storm that is coming. So we'll start out with a little bit of economic stuff and one truly absurd economic story. We'll do that when we come back. Stick around.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
There were a lot of big headlines while I was gone. The news is, it's so rapid. I was conversing with somebody who listens to the podcast. You can find this show podcast at The Mike Madison Show. It's on all kinds of different platforms. Apple Podcast. It's on Podbean.com. And you can find the podcast. One of the people outside of the state of Mississippi listens to the podcast said that I should just pick up the news where I find it here, not try to go back and rehash the last 2 weeks. I agree with her. I think that's right. But there were a lot of big headlines. One of the biggest ones was the Alex Jones verdict, close to $1 billion because he hurt somebody's feelings. I know that these people said that they were under threat, but this was a big blow against free speech, a ridiculous, ridiculous verdict in a ridiculous trial. But it will have a chilling effect, and we'll see what happens to Alex Jones. I've listened to Alex Jones. He's done some good stuff. I always liked his guests more than his content himself. And then during the Trump term, he really kind of lost me, to be honest with you. He went full on Trump. This was a man who had spoken truth to power. And as I saw Donald Trump doing things that I thought somebody like an Alex Jones would take exception to, and he was fully on board and justifying it all, I kind of lost interest a little bit. And now Alex Jones has come out and called himself an anti-libertarian and says the Libertarian Party is a cancer. So I disagree with Alex Jones on these things, too. But he's done some very good work over the years, and I absolutely support him in this witch hunt that has gone after him. They've tried to absolutely destroy him. There's no doubt about that. So we'll see how that turns out. But one of the more beautiful things that took place, I think this was just last week, was Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan is a phenomenon. It's very interesting to watch, and it's one of these situations where, boy, I'm glad that this guy is, sane, and it may be his sanity. Joe Rogan's not a partisan guy. He's actually talked about he wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders. I believe his ideas on that have been somewhat tempered, particularly as he's had many guests on, like Michael Malice and Dave Smith, who's a libertarian comedian. I think they're starting to kind of explain things to him. Joe is somebody who will listen to people, which is what is really kind of amazing in a media landscape where they don't listen. They don't entertain any dissenting views. They tell you that they are the only people worthy of listening to, as we all know that they are massively dishonest. And Joe Rogan has broken through all of that. And I think he gets something like, 20 million people per episode? And I think he puts out an episode just about every day. I don't listen to all of them. I don't have the time. But it was fantastic. And one of the worst things about the past 5 or 6 years has been just the absolute destruction of the rebel class of comedians and rock and rollers. It's been so sad to see them become such statist lackeys. The left that used to be kind of fighters, anti-establishment, has become the establishment. They love the FBI. They love the CIA. They love the wars. They love the pharmaceutical companies. the left has just become these statist lackeys after having been, as I was growing up, kind of the rebels out there, and there was no more rebel institution than Rolling Stone magazine. I loved Rolling Stone. I've told you many times, I'm a frustrated rock and roller. If I could do it all over again, it's probably what I would have done. And I remember being an avid subscriber to Rolling Stone back in the day. It's kind of like Saturday Night Live. Those of us can remember when Saturday Night Live was funny, can also remember when Rolling Stone was interesting. Joe Rogan had the founder. You pronounce his name Jan? Is it Jan Wenner or Jan Wenner? I don't know. J-A-N-N. Had him on to talk about regulating the internet. And it's just, it's amazing to listen to these people who used to be the rebels. I mean, this is Rolling Stone. These are rockers, trashing hotel rooms, drugs, sex, rock and roll. Now they're all about wanting the government to, daddy, govern me harder. Anyway, this guy came on Joe Rogan's show, and I didn't want to do anything without playing this clip.
To regulate the internet?
Absolutely.
You trust the people that got us into the Iraq war under false pretenses to regulate the internet?
Do you think
that makes any sense?
Well, wait a minute. The people who got us into the Iraq war.
It's the government.
Was the politicians.
It's the government.
In the end, yes, it's the government. But who else is going to regulate?
But if they're going to be in power and they're regulating the internet, they're going to regulate the internet in a way that suits their best interests. No, the same way they do with the banking industry, the same way they do with the environment, the same way they do with energy, the same way they do with everything.
No,
what represents their interests? You're talking about so much money involved in disseminating information in
and
a very particular way.
The richest companies in the world right now are the internet companies are. Rich beyond belief.
Yeah, it's fat, but it's a disruptive thing that.
Now you need to always remember too, and as I was listening to this, and it was just so surprised. I was driving through Dallas. That's where I've been for the last 2 weeks. I was listening to this. And I was just scratching my head, saying that the head of Rolling Stone. But these former print media organizations have been decimated by the internet. They have really been decimated by the internet. Now, he sounds earnestly like he wants to be regulated. He wants the internet regulated. He wants the government in charge of these things. Again, this has got to be a guy that at some point in his life, starting Rolling Stone magazine, had to have been anti-establishment. You remember the music industry going against Tipper Gore. That was a Democrat. She was this conservative censor, and people like Rolling Stone were challenging them on their censorship of records and albums. Now this guy, I think he sounds earnest, but I would imagine there's something in his business model where he realizes this internet's out of control because it's crushing all the old print media. Now maybe that's where this absolutely comes from, but he seems pretty earnest now. He's also a boomer. No offense to the boomers, but this is kind of where the boomers mostly are. They want this certainty of the government, and these hippies that have turned into boomers is really quite interesting. I want somebody to follow me around. Follow me around with a gun. And as I age, as I become the age of Jan or Jan Wenner, however you pronounce his name, if I start to change my views and want the government to govern us harder because I'm scared of the new world, just double tap me and put me out of my misery. I don't ever want to become this person.
It has never existed before. I think it exists. And I think where we're at is where we're at. I think we need to move forward collectively as a country with an ethic that respects truth and that appreciates opinions and reality. And an understanding of things that's not necessarily possible with corporate interests involved in the dissemination of information.
But there's no way to do that except through the government. There's no way that you can do that except through the government.
Why is that?
Human nature is not going to change.
But the government's not going to change either.
But the government is capable of change. Okay, look, the government regulates, for example, the food supply.
This is just beautiful. Joe Rogan just knocks this one out of the park. He could have gone a lot deeper on this, but this is just fantastic. I love anybody. I get into these conversations fairly regularly myself. One of my first questions to anybody particularly people on the left who believe that the government is the solution to all of our problems. If we just give them a little bit more power and a little bit more money, they're going to fix things. One of the first questions I ask anybody, and the best way to try to change somebody's mind is to ask them questions, not scream at them, call them names, and tell them they're an idiot. But I will constantly ask people, name one thing that the government is good at. Now, a lot of people will point to, well, Medicare. That's probably the one I hear most. Now, of course, I'll easily point out Medicare is completely insolvent. If you gave me an unlimited amount of money to just dole out to people with no accountability, really, then I can get a bunch of people medical care, too. But that doesn't make it a good program. It has driven up the cost of health care, and it is completely insolvent. More on that in just a little bit as we get into some economic numbers here. But when you ask somebody, what does the government do well, you really pretty much get a long, blank stare, even for the people that are advocating, like this gentleman is, for more government involvement to regulate the internet. But he attempts, to try to tell you a couple of things that the government is good at, and Joe Rogan does a fantastic job of deconstructing that.
Capable of change. Okay, look. The government regulates, for example, the food supply, or can regulate. Let's take the
food supply.
Yeah, that Department of Agriculture.
Why have they let glyphosate infestate all of our foods?
Let's take this one thing.
Yeah, but that's a problem. That's the government regulating.
Well, then we better get better politicians in them to appoint better people. I mean,
any day now, we're going to get better politicians. Yeah, I mean, the food supply. Has anybody looked around recently? We've never been fatter. We've never been sicker. We've never had more stuff polluting our systems from this food supply that this guy believes, because it doesn't kill you the next day. He believes the government's on the case. No, it takes 10, 20, 30 years for the food in the United States to kill you. I chronicle this every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock on Hump Day Health. Yet because it doesn't kill you tomorrow, he believes the government is doing a great job regulating the food supply.
It's not, again, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Right.
Okay. So let's take the SEC or take the Food and Drug Administration's regulates Big Pharma. On the one hand, we've got a very safe supply of drugs in this country, you know.
Safe?
Their drugs are tested. You know, you don't get too many bad drugs, you know, prescribed drugs.
25% of all drugs approved by the FDA get recalled.
See, if I were Joe, I would say, you do understand that about 200,000 people a year die from properly prescribed, properly taken, FDA-tested medications. So this was just absolutely beautiful. Thank goodness Joe Rogan is there. I don't agree with Joe Rogan on everything, but boy, he's an open-minded guy, and he is he's good at learning. Joe Rogan's not scared to learn something new. That's something I would hope Americans might start to embrace. But in his learning things new, a lot of Americans are learning things in a new way too. Joe Rogan is a national treasure at this point, and it's beautiful to see him doing laps around our mainstream media. I'll be right back.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I went to Dallas for 2 weeks. And it's funny, I'm a terrible packer. I just start grabbing stuff and shoving it into bags. I always get places and I realize, oh, look at that. I've got 18 white T-shirts and 2 pairs of underwear and 1 pair of shoes. It's like I know I do. I don't know what's wrong with me. But the one thing I did pack, and I packed well, was a giant cooler of Stonington Farm beef. I am still doing the carnivore diet, I guess. I hate that word, but my diet is mostly Stonington Farm beef these days. Ground beef, chuck eye steaks, rib eye steaks, and lots of eggs and bacon as well. But it's just interesting to go kind of cross country I have a small car with a very small trunk. It was mostly full of beef. I stayed in an extended stay hotel there and hauled my big cooler up there to keep my Stonington Farm beef ready. This is fantastic food. I'm telling you, it just tastes great. The nutritional profile of Stonington Farm beef is the best around. This is grass-fed, no grains. Cows aren't designed to eat grains. It is grass-fed, no hormones, no antibiotics. The nutritional profile of this meat is fantastic, and I've been feeling great, as it has been about 75-80% of everything I've eaten for the past 3 weeks. They are going to be doing more delivering up to the Jackson area. You can order in bulk. You can order a half cow. Get together with some friends. It's a great way to save a lot of money. But they are also now picking up people in Jackson, thank goodness. And they will be making smaller deliveries. When they come up here with a delivery, if you want to place a smaller order, you can get them to deliver to you. They're going to be up here next week. We haven't arrived at a date or a time yet. But I'm going to make sure that I facilitate that. And if I need to pick up something for you and then meet you later and let you pick it up from it, we'll figure it out. This is a local farm in Perkiston, Mississippi, raising a cattle the right way and giving you the best nutritional profile. The meat is also very affordable. It is cheaper than what you can get at the grocery stores, particularly when you buy in bulk. Their ground beef, they're actually going to run a special right now if you call and order their ground beef, which is just fantastic. I've been eating a ton of that, and I found a way to eat liver. Liver is a nutritional powerhouse. It's one of the most nutrient-dense foods available to man. And a lot of people don't like liver, and I got to tell you, I couldn't remember. It's been so long since I had liver. I tried to cook some. It's an acquired taste, I guess. So I've been trying to figure out a way to get liver into me without maybe just quick grilling it. And so what I've started doing is cutting it up and putting it into the ground beef kind of as a part of my hamburgers. So I'm getting that great nutrition plus all the great nutrition from the ground beef. Anyway, they're running a special on it. It's usually $6.99 a pound. It's $5.99 a pound now. They come in little pound packs. I have one just about every single day. It's fantastic meat. So check out StoningtonFarm.com. That's StoningtonFarm.com. You're going to need to call them. They like to talk to their customers. They turned me on to a steak. I'm almost scared to tell you what this steak is because sometimes they run short on these things, and I want to make sure I'm going to get some. But I love the listeners to the show. It's called a chuck eye steak. They called it the poor man's ribeye. And it's a great size. It's smaller than their great ribeyes. The ribeyes are fantastic, but I got to tell you, the ribeyes are so big, sometimes I struggle to get through them. The chuck eye steak is just a fantastic. It's less expensive, and it's about perfect portion size for me, so you can get a chuck eye steak there. But check out StoningtonFarm.com. You'll see everything that they offer, and then just give them a call. And they'll be up here next week, so you'll be able to get this with, I believe, no delivery charges whatsoever since they're already delivering stuff up here. So call Katie Stonington. You'll find their number and all their information and what they carry at StoningtonFarm.com. Longest live read I've ever done, but it's because I really, really enjoy these people's products and I'm so happy to have them on the show. And thank you to you, the listeners, who have started placing orders with this farm because they're delivering more to Jackson, and this is really their only outlet to get the word out. So this is fantastic that they're seeing good success here. I tell you what, I'm going to take a quick break. Yeah, that was just I'm telling you, if I can help people get healthier, I dedicate an hour of this show every single week to that. I found a product that can make you healthier. This is the most nutritious beef you can get. So I'm going to talk about it, not just in terms of an advertiser, but in terms of the fact that I am hell-bent and determined to teach people that there are better quality foods that will improve your health outcomes. Like I say, Hump Day Health, it's all about that. When I come back, though, I do want to get in some of this economic news. Boy, the Fed's in a box. Our U.S. government is in big trouble right now. And I'm going to give you a little bit of the math to show you exactly where we stand right now and where it could go. Matter of fact, I think it's where it's going to go. It's going to be a real shame. You're about to have your pockets picked. I think I understand the 87,000 new IRS agents now, because the federal government's about to be spending a lot more money. A lot. I'll be right back. I like the French braids in your hair. And them I've been watching economic activity here, trying to parse through it since probably around 1998 when I really got interested in economics. I know this is it's boring to a lot of people, not to me. It's almost like a hobby. I spend hours, just about a day, reading articles about economics. I don't know why I'm so fascinated about it. I'm not a wealthy man. I don't have my hands on the levers, and I'm not getting wealthy, shorting the market right now or anything, but I'm just fascinated by it. So I've pretty much decided to just ignore politicians, just in my personal life. Best I can, anyway. It's hard to see what's things crumbling around us and realize that it is because of politicians and the policies that they implement. But just as a personal basis, I guess it's a coping mechanism at this point. I just don't care what they say. I just really don't care. But the economy affects us all. Inflation came in hot again at about 8.2% for September, meaning, of course, to you and me, that's about 16%. Go to shadowstats.com and you'll see if the way they calculate. Always remember when you hear these inflation numbers and they try to compare them to the early 1980s, that's not a good comparison because we don't calculate them the same way. If we calculated inflation the same way now we did in the 1980s, inflation would be running around 16%. The reason they changed that calculation is because they want to hide that from you. Now, your bank account knows what's going on. We know what's going on. But the official statistics, they basically have just juiced the numbers. As I was leaving, right before I left, the Bank of England, the central bank over in England, had bailed out the pension plans, and it kept them from collapse. It won't last for long, but they bought themselves a little bit of time. This is probably one of the first real major things to happen in this financial crisis, and they papered over it by going out and printing more money real quick. They said it was for a limited amount of time, but they also said that in 2009. Central banks around the world said, well, this recession, this is an emergency thing. We've never seen anything like this. It's the great financial crisis. We got to print money for just a little bit, but we pinky swear we're not going to do it for long. Here we are 14 years later, and they're still continuing to tell us that it's just temporary, just a little bit more money printing. I've talked a lot here about the bond market, which people should get familiar with and start to understand. Here's what's interesting. If you loan the U.S. federal government money for 6 months. 6 months, okay? They're going to pay you 4.3% interest on that money. That's if you loan the U.S. federal government money for 6 months. What if you loan it to them for 30 years? I mean, if they're going to pay you 4.3% to loan it to them for 6 months, what about tying up your money for 30 years? What are we talking about? 2052? You'd get your money back? They're only paying you 3.9%. That's called yield curve inversion. If you loan the U.S. federal government money for 1 year, they'll pay you 4.475% right now. 4.4%. 30 years, just 3.9%. You see how that doesn't make much sense, right? If you loan them money for 2 years, they'll pay you 4.4%. More than if you loan it to them for 30 years. Now, I don't have time and I'd probably get tongue-tied trying to explain to you why these things happen, but the 10-year is what really needs to be watched. It's kind of the benchmark for mortgage rates here. Right now, it's trading at 3.959%. It was just about, 5 weeks ago that I was really watching it. I said, if it goes above 3%, look out. Well, now it's about to hit 4%, and I would imagine it's going to continue to go higher. One of the reasons I bring this up is because I heard the headline while I was gone that the Social Security Administration has made an announcement. I think this is their largest ever COLA, cost of living adjustment. They're going to raise retirees' benefits by, I believe it was 8.7%. Now, this is going to cost the federal government. The number that I heard, I didn't do the math on it myself. I believe the number I heard was about $100 billion more per year. And remember, Social Security is a Ponzi scheme in the first place. They don't have this money, right? And anybody receiving Social Security, you're not getting your own money back. You're actually getting money from younger workers. It's a Ponzi scheme. I know that's a distasteful truth. People don't want to hear that. I paid in. It's my money. I deserve to get it out. No, you let politicians steal it. You stood by when they told you they were raiding the Social Security Trust Fund to spend money right now and putting a bunch of IOUs in there. The IOUs are being paid by younger workers that money is funneling from their paychecks into your bank account. It's a Ponzi scheme. So $100 billion extra per year when they make this adjustment to Social Security. So there's a good chunk of change, isn't it? I know $100 billion doesn't sound like much. It's about what we've given to Ukraine in the past 6 months. But it's the debt payments with these interest rates I'm telling you about, these bond rates. And this is why the bond market is so important. As these rates have gone up, I'm going to give you some numbers here. It's just interesting. 2 years ago, the interest on the national debt was about $350 billion. This is sickening and maddening to me that the American people have just sat back and allowed the Thad Cochrans, the Roger Wickers, the Benny Thompsons, the Nancy Pelosi's, all of them. You voted for a lot of these people multiple times, and they spent so much money that they are stealing $350 billion a year from U.S. taxpayers just to pay interest because they couldn't control themselves. And yet people still cheer for either one of these parties. $350 billion they've been stealing from you to pay interest on their crimes of overspending in years past. That was 2 years ago. In August, I think this is the most recent month we've got, in August, interest expense, this is not paying off debt, you understand, this is just carrying the note. In August, the interest expense alone in August was $56 billion. So that's $672 billion a year. Interest. Interest. Now, keep in mind of this, we're spending right now, the pace is about $672 billion a year, just interest on the national debt. Russia's entire annual military budget is just $60 billion. We're spending 10 times as much as Russia spends on their entire national defense. Maybe they're spending a little more now. 10 times just interest on our debt. That's before any programs. And for any of you statists out there, any of you government lovers out there who say, but Mike, the roads and bridges. No, this is just interest on the debt. $672 billion a year. And we've only had interest rates rising for 7 months. So let me just tell you. We have not churned over all of the old debt that we're paying basically zero on. 1% or less. We're still, a lot of the debt in this $56 billion in August, a lot of the debt in there is still only at like 1% interest. But now, rates are showing 4% interest. So over the course of the next couple of years, I think it takes 3 years to turn over most of the U.S. national debt. That means every month that goes by, we're going to have to settle old bonds by borrowing new money to pay off the old borrowers. And again, it's another Ponzi scheme. But we're going to be doing it at higher and higher and higher interest. So we will easily see, within the next year for sure, we'll easily see over $1 trillion just in interest expense on the debt. And you think about all of these Congress critters, these two political parties. I'm the crazy one because I'm a libertarian and I don't buy into these parties, right? I'm the cancer, according to Alex Jones. You've got these two political parties. We are now going to see at least $1 trillion just in interest expense. That kind of makes the extra $100 billion for Social Security, the cost of living adjustment, seem kind of small. Now, here's the problem. As this goes on, and the Fed may turn around and start to lower rates again, but the bottom line is they've said they're not going to buy our bonds anymore, which means that what they charge, what they set the interest rate at really won't matter. It's what people will loan the U.S. government money for. So they may not be able to take these interest rates down again. That means within the next year or two, we could see $2 trillion in interest expense on the debt. That's not roads and bridges. It's not military salaries. That's not even social programs, should you like some of those. $2 trillion, which I would imagine is greater than maybe every other country's budget in its entirety. I'm not sure where we stand on that. I don't know what China's national, annual budget is. They spend about $200 billion on their military, and we're all scared of them. Somehow they're very efficient in their use, I guess. But if we're gonna be between $1 and $2 trillion in interest, and people are going to go pull levers for one of these two groups of people that brought us down this path within just a couple of weeks now in the midterms. Oh, I understand. We've got to wrestle control away from the Democrats. They're making a they do drive faster towards Armageddon than the Republicans do. I will give you that. It would be nice to go it would be nice to go towards the cliff at a slightly slower pace. We all need time to prepare. I am all for a red wave. But this is Republicans and Democrats. It is Trump. It is Biden. It is Bush. It is Obama. We are about to eclipse $1 trillion just in interest on the debt. You might think about that next time you go to one of these rallies for your GOP hero.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, back from a two-week hiatus. There's somebody texting me right now. She said, I was glad to have me back. I thought my assignment in Dallas was going to last a little bit longer. It's a pretty lucrative deal, so I wouldn't have minded a little bit more time. I missed doing the show for sure, but she said, I know you're maybe a little bummed that your assignment ended a little earlier than you thought, but when are you going to come back? She said, to your loyal listeners, we'd like to know when you'll be back on the air. Well, how loyal can you be? I've been live for the last hour. Anyway, it's good to be back. good to be back. You know, I'm listening to the news, just the news breaks. And this is why I really couldn't listen to the news while I was gone, because these thoughts would rattle around my head. I had no one to talk to. I want to start calling my friends and doing a radio show over the phone to them, so I had to kind of avoid the news. They've got the new over-the-counter hearing aids now. You heard this? Oh, the government's going to let you just go out and buy whatever you want. Call it a hearing aid. I don't believe the government should be involved in deciding what you use or regulating the hearing aid market in any way, shape, or form. But they have been, because I'm sure there's a lobbyist for audiologists, and I'm sure there's lobbyists for the hearing aid manufacturers, and they pumped money into Congress. But they were swamped by companies like Jabra and Bose and Apple, who have got over-the-counter hearing aids, and essentially they just funneled money into Congress to get the over-the-counter stuff. So what feels like this benevolent act by our Congress was just another special interest payday. Now, the result, if you can buy whatever you want for a hearing aid, that's great. I think there's an argument by audiologists to say to get custom-made hearing aids is certainly far superior than what you're going to get over-the-counter, but this is everybody's choice. We should have choice for everything. I want the government out of everything. But I just don't want anybody ever to think that the government is being benevolent, that they are somehow increasing your freedom because they're just a bunch of great people who love you. No, this was a very big lobbying effort by companies like Bose, who has a product they want to sell you for $800. They just couldn't get Medicare, Medicaid, and other places to pay for it because it couldn't be categorized as a hearing aid. Now it can be. Also listening to the news today, Kiev is under attack. I will not say the globalist Kiev. It is Kiev to me. Kiev is under attack. This is Russia has taken the gloves off. The bombing of the bridge in Crimea leading to Crimea. The Russians, after the pipeline attack, the Russians pretty much said, look, we were trying to just, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it was not a bloody war and that a lot of people are not suffering over there. But I don't know anybody that's with any honesty that thinks that the Russians were not capable of a much more brutal assault on Ukraine. The United States has decided to get involved in this, to funnel weapons into Ukraine, to make this a protracted war. The neocon warmongers in Washington, D.C. and the European Union and Zelensky himself are willing to fight to the last Ukrainian. And so we've made this as bad as it could possibly be, always with the potential of making it even worse. And now Russia has said, well, our half measures, our kinder, gentler invasion is meeting too much resistance. There's too much weapons. So I tell you what, it's gloves off, and this is going to get particularly ugly. There's still, to my knowledge, there's no diplomacy taking place right now. I've got some clips on that, but I probably won't get to it today. Maybe we'll save it for tomorrow. What's going on there is a crime. But it's amazing to see the West, you know, bomb a pipeline, and then when Russia reacts, we point at them. How dare you do X, Y, or Z? We can bomb this one bridge leading to Crimea. And when the government in Russia, the military there, says, okay, well, you want to escalate? Let's escalate. And then we just point at them like, hey, it wasn't us. I love America's this idea we're just this super-duper friendly country, and everybody just keeps attacking us. It's just unbelievable, the West constantly trying to make this as bad as it could be. I'm not a fan of what's going on in Ukraine right now at the hands of Russia, but boy, the provocations just never end. They are trying to push this thing to be just about as bad as it could possibly be. It's interesting to me, you know, why this thought struck me the other day, but I was listening to a couple of headlines on the news, and I realized, you know, it's very interesting. The left really tries to scare you about Mother Nature, right? You believe there's an existential crisis, our planet's trying to kill us. This global warming, oh, well, I guess that's a wrong way to put it. What they say is that we are killing ourselves because climate change, nature is going to destroy us all, make Earth uninhabitable, or it's a virus. They believe that if you give the government enough money and enough power that we can hold off Mother Nature, that we can control the climate, we can control disease, we can do all these things, just give them all the power. The Republicans, on the other hand, always try to scare the crap out of you against other people, right? It's Russia, it's China, it's Iran. They want you to fear other countries, Muslims. It's just interesting how they play off of our fears. Now, Democrats also throw in the hatred of anybody who thinks differently than you because they're all white supremacists somehow. This is a fairly new thing, but fear constantly being used against us by both of these political parties. And, of course, right on time. Here it comes. We're heading into the fall. I think the high tomorrow around here is going to be like 57 degrees. Is that right? We're getting down into sub-freezing temperatures. That is kind of that's a whiplash from what we've had. I've been kind of enjoying this weather. I used to drive a Jeep Wrangler. I love taking the top and the doors off of a Jeep and driving around. It is really great. For about 6 weeks a year here in Mississippi, for about 6 weeks every year, about three in the spring and three in the fall, it is just absolutely magnificent to just have the air blowing around you. And then suddenly in the summer, you stop at a traffic light and you start just dripping with sweat. You got a constant motion or you're in trouble in that Jeep. But I guess we've had our 3 weeks of beautiful fall and now we're heading into a little bit nastier time. But as we head into fall, of course, we know what the big fear is. Another surge. And here is the story on Daily Beast. This is a left-wing organization here. There's their headline. The nightmare COVID variant that beats our immunity is finally here. You know, it feels to me like they're kind of, it's here. It's here. It's finally here. We got something to talk about with COVID again. The XBB subvariant. Now, I was pretty fond of the BA subvariants. They've now moved on to an XBB. I'll have to kind of, I just saw that this morning. I'll have to figure out what the subtle messaging is between of XBB. But the XBB subvariant of Omicron appears to be the fastest spreading COVID virus yet. And most of our treatments don't touch it. I got to tell you, most of the treatments that our medical establishment rolled out against COVID, everything from the gloves to the face mask to the partitions, the plastic shields everywhere, up to the clot shot itself. None of these things have ever touched COVID. Every single one of them, a swing and a miss. Matter of fact, an evil swing and a miss. So it's not anything new for the XBB that our treatments do not touch it. Daily Beast says a new subvariant of the novel coronavirus called XBB dramatically announced itself earlier this week in Singapore. New COVID-19 cases more than doubled in a day from 4,700 on Monday to 11,700 on Tuesday, and XBB is almost certainly why. It's also apparently appeared in Hong Kong. This is a highly mutated descendant of the Omicron variant, the Omicron, as I called it. that drove a record wave of infections starting around a year ago. Quote, it is likely that the most immune evasive and poses potential problems for current monoclonal antibody-based treatments and prevention strategies. Of course, they go on to say that's the bad news. The good news is that the new bivalent vaccine boosters from Pfizer and Moderna seem to work just fine against XBB, even though the original vaccines are less effective. They won't prevent all infections and reinfections, but they should significantly reduce the chance of severe infection, potentially leading to hospitalization or death. There we go again. They are not going to stop with this stuff. And I've got more stories, what's going on around COVID, or really the consequences of COVID and everything that they have told us to do for the past, what, good Lord, what are we into this now? 2.5 years? Am I right? Is that possible? Is it really that long? Yeah, it was the beginning of 2022. I was hearing a story. What was this guy's name? Brainerd? I forget his first name. He was, Clarita. Richard Clarita. Richard Clarita was one of the Federal Reserve heads, I think, in the Dallas Fed. Right before the Fed announced that they were going to be stimulating the economy in response to COVID, the day before he put between 1 million and 5 million. I love when they do these disclosures, these financial disclosures for government people. Have you noticed this? When they want to talk about some Congress critter's net wealth, they always put it between this vast number. They have somewhere between $500,000 and $16 million in assets. I mean, it's not, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's always this wide window. Why can't we know exactly what it is? God knows they are in every nook and cranny of our financial lives, but they always plug them into some kind of a window. So this Richard Clarita character on the Fed, right the day before the Fed announced it would start printing up money to, in response to the closing of our economy, he placed a $1 to $5 million bet on the S&P futures. And of course, when they announced that they were going to start money printing, that's when the stock market started taking off. It was the day before. Now, what happened to him? Well, he was forced to sell those things. And when was he forced to sell those things? Right at the market peak. Did he get in trouble? Nah, he did resign. He left. Pretty easy to resign from a job after you've banked a huge profit on insider trading at the Federal Reserve level. For the rest of us, we were hurt pretty substantially by most of the things that went around COVID. Yours truly, deeply, deeply included in that. It was brutal to me. But it's good to know Richard Clarita doing well with it. But some headlines and stories that I've run across over the last few days about what's going on around COVID stuff. I don't know if this is rehashing. Maybe people aren't interested, but I'm telling you, they're not done with us on this stuff. Canada's talking about possibly bringing back mask requirements. Don't think for a second the same insanity will not continue here. It's a little sad in Dallas. I went to one of those kind of swanky grocery stores, kind of a Whole Foods. I think it was called Market Street. It's got a lot of organic food, kind of craft. It's kind of a Whole Foods vibe. And I don't know what it is about people. You'll see the same thing in a Whole Foods here. I don't know if that's a left tilt of the people that shop there, but you would suspect that people who shop at a Whole Foods that are looking for organic foods and things like that would be healthier people. Yet I saw many people in Dallas at this healthier grocery store, a lot of them in masks. It was quite disappointing. But it's the case. They're not done with us yet. Some stories about that and what we can expect to hear more headlines of this coming flu season. Be right back.
A werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
So how is the grand experiment on all of humankind going these days when it comes to the shots, to all of the restrictions we did, particularly to our children? You know, I was listening to a football game yesterday. I was watching the State-Kentucky game. And one of the announcers made some kind of off-the-cuff comment. He was talking about the 2020 game And he said something about his audio had cut out. He'd lost home internet. And at first I was like, you know, what's he talking about? And then I realized, oh, yeah, we did those kinds of things. We had the broadcasters, people who were actually doing commentary for sporting events. They had to stay home and do it from their bedroom because we were so scared. As we get away from this thing, I mean, sometimes I forget exactly how stupid and weak and childish we were around COVID. But this is why I bring it up now, because it's not over. We're going to keep doing it. Hopefully we will leave our kids alone, but I doubt that very seriously. How's that grand experiment on our children working out right now? Well, let's take a listen to this one.
Well, there is alarming new evidence tonight of the impact the COVID pandemic has had on American high schoolers.
Of course, I'm going to inject. Had nothing to do with the pandemic. There's no studies out there that show you COVID makes you stupider. I know it's more stupid. See, I say stupider. It highlights stupidity, right? Anyway, there's nothing that shows that COVID has an effect on your intelligence. It is the political class's response to a 99.9% survivable disease that hurt our children.
ACT test scores, which show the level of readiness for college-level courses, hit a 30-year low this year. The average composite score was 19.8 out of 36, making this the lowest average score since 1991. 42% met none of the ACT's subject benchmarks.
Good God. I mean, I got to tell you, I just don't think it's possible through incompetence alone to have such horrific results for basically every segment of our society. Health, intellect, happiness. Oh, we got some new news on antidepressants I'll be bringing to the Hump Day Health Show on Wednesday. But, lowest test scores. We're at 19 out of 36. 36 is the high on the ACT. I made a 31 on the ACT. For anybody who's asking, I kind of peaked in some of my achievement things back in high school. It's not something I'm very proud of, but I do have to mention it when it comes up. It doesn't come up. When you get into middle age, it's pretty rare that people bring up your ACT score. So I'm going to use this point right now to tell you, look, I'm a standardized test taker. I've never understood people who couldn't do well on standardized tests. There were people a lot smarter than me that really struggled with standardized testing. There's just something, I don't know, it's almost like it's a skill unto itself. I did really well on standardized tests. But anyway, a 19, that's almost half. If you've got a perfect score on an ACT of 36 and we're at 19, for those of you who didn't do well on the ACT, half of 36 is 18. 19 is just one more than 18. So we basically got kids out there right now that are doing about 50% on the college entrance exam. This is not good, and it's been made markedly worse because of COVID restrictions, of course. And this is what's coming around. Get ready for this one. We knew it was coming.
Now to the growing concerns over rising flu cases. Here in New York, officials have noted 600 influenza cases compared to just 150 this time last year. Dr. Jen Ashton here. And Jen, it's still early in the flu season.
Yeah, and you mentioned it perfectly, George. It's 600 compared to what, right? You have to compare it to what, and you have to compare it to when. So, yes.
Now, that's interesting to me. Because we went through all of their COVID reporting where they were talking about deaths per day, and I was doing it here. I was doing shows about, let's compare that to deaths from diabetes every year. They didn't do any comparisons. When 100 people died of COVID, it was this incredible existential threat to all of us. But I pointed out many times that many people die every day. It's an unfortunate part of life is death. And people die constantly. They never made any comparisons back when they were running the death stats on COVID.
The slope is going up. The cases are going up. And the concern is that people won't take it seriously. Why is this happening? I think really two main theories at this
point. Now, I wonder if she's going to point out the theory of antibody-dependent enhancement. WYAB's covered it, I think, on every single locally hosted show here on the station. And that is, if you jack up your immune system by taking these ridiculous experimental shots, much like the scientists warn, it leaves you more susceptible to every other disease that isn't coronavirus. And now we find out coronavirus, too. I think at this point, I don't know, is it you're double as likely to get COVID if you had the shots? Or is it five times? I can't remember. You're more likely to get COVID now if you've had the shots than if you haven't. This is coming out in statistics most recently at the National Health Services in Great Britain.
point. Number one, our behavior has changed. We're out and about more than we were in the last 2 years. And then lower vaccination rates. That is always a concern. So remember, we have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. It's COVID and influenza, and we need the vaccination.
Oh, of course. How do we handle these two things, these double assaults? It's the flu, man. They're talking about the... Do you remember? Anybody remember like 2019? I know we're like goldfish in this country. We don't have long memories for many things. But I remember back in 2019, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11. I remember people just saying, oh, yeah, I got the flu last week. Oh, my gosh, I've got a cold. Hey, I didn't see it at work today. What's going on? Ah, I've got a cold. And that's all that was said. We didn't rush to the emergency room because we had a cold or the flu. No, we just realized it was a part of life. You stay home. You stay away from people. You get over it. You talk about it the next day, the next week when you get back to work for about an hour, and then you go on with your life. That was back, you know, 2019.
So when and how should people get their vaccine?
So if you look at the who, what, where, when, why, and how of flu vaccination, according to the CDC, it's recommended that most people get their vaccination. You know, you can get it right now, but by the end of October, and it is never too late because the flu season goes through March or April. Who should get it? Pretty much everyone 6 months of age and older. And again, in terms of the what and the logistics, you can get both the COVID vaccine and the flu vaccine on the same day. The one thing I would recommend, if I were your doctor, George, get one in one arm and the other in the other arm.
And have one bad day and it's all over.
Better safe than sorry.
Absolutely. Jen Ashton, thanks very much.
I don't know if George Stephanopoulos has looked at the statistics on things like myocarditis. It's not just one bad day. It can be the rest of your life full of bad days. I can't. Who was that that I played a clip from where they said that's I think it was that Dr. Zha. He said, I think that's why God gave us two arms. So you could get a flu shot in one. and the experimental clot shot in the other. That's why God gave us two arms. This is sad. You know, he says, I mean, it's, you know, got to go out there and get those shots. Nothing wrong with those shots. Oh, just George Stephanopoulos says just one bad day. That's all it is. Well, There's a lot of women in this country that have had one really, really bad day, according to this OBGYN.
Okay, go for it.
All right, I'm Kimberly Biss. I'm an OBGYN that practices in St. Pete, Florida. I can definitely say since the vaccine rollout started, we have seen in our practice a decrease in new OB numbers, which would be infertility, by about 50%. We've also seen an increase in miscarriage rate by about 50%. And I would say there's probably about a 25% increase in abnormal pap smears as well as cervical malignancies in our area.
Oh, what would an OBGYN know anything about fertility stuff? A 50% increase in miscarriages, a 50%, I guess, decrease in fertility. There was also this story that came out. Doug Brignole. Brignole. Doug Brignole. I think I've seen this guy's name before. It's a pretty recognizable name. I think I've heard the name before, but I wasn't really familiar with him. He's a bodybuilder guy. The guy was ripped, and he was 62. Really, kind of. I look at that as I'm in my middle age and doing what I can for health and heading to the gym. Doug Brignole was killing it. He looked great. He was a bodybuilder. He was getting ready for a bodybuilding competition, kind of like an exposition thing. Obviously, at 62 years old, he's not competing in the big tournaments right now, but he was getting ready to do an exhibition. Very, very still involved in the bodybuilding community. 62, died suddenly. It's really very sad. I mean, I'm not saying anything about it. And there's nothing to say for sure that the vaccine is what killed him, but what did happen was him sending out a tweet which basically said, I'm the guy. I don't know what all you people are worried about with this shot. It's obviously safe. I've done my research. Let me be the canary in the coal mine. If I don't die, then it's safe to take. Now, he took this last year, and he died this year. I am in no way able to tie that. They've not released a cause of death, but this was an extremely healthy 62-year-old. Now, some people said it might have been on steroids. I think the steroids are notoriously not great for the heart. And if you add a little bit of insult to that with shots and boosters, that may have been the lethal combination. But a 62-year-old guy just fit as a fiddle, and this is just one of these died suddenly headlines. And the reason I kind of bring it up, let me pull up this clip real quick. I didn't do it. I was not doing my due diligence. I'm chatting with a couple of friends on by text while I should have been getting my clips together. I apologize for that. But here we go. This was one of Doug Brignoli's friends. This is incredibly sad. I'm not cheering this, but it just shows you this died suddenly thing. You start paying attention to these headlines of died suddenly. Now, this could be just that we're paying more attention to it. I really try to be as objective as I can here, but it just seems like a lot of younger people, very fit people, are having a lot of problems these days. Maybe it's just we're noticing it more, but I don't think so.
I mean, we were just talking. We were laughing. We were having a great time last weekend, and then he just I talked to him on Wednesday. That's just to see how he was doing. I wanted to thank him, and so I FaceTimed him, and he looked good. He was getting ready to train, and he was doing an exhibition at the universe this year. It's supposed to be next weekend, and he was training for that, and he looked great, and.
Yeah, so this guy's fighting back tears because one of his great friends suddenly dropped dead. You have to see this guy again. His name is Doug Brignoli. This is not a guy that ate himself to death like most Americans do in the slow kill of our food supply that Jan Winter, whatever his name is, thinks the government does such a good job regulating. This was a guy in just peak physical shape and dies suddenly. Now, he did put out a tweet essentially that said, I'm going to take this shot and you just watch me. If I'm okay, then it's good for everybody.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard and melted, but we still have the radio.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. A lot's going on. I've been gone for 2 weeks. And a lot's going on in headlines. Why am I focusing in kind of on COVID stuff? Isn't that old news, Mike? I'm telling you, if we do not hold the people accountable for what's taken place over the last 2.5 years, it's just going to get worse. We have such a bad habit in this country of letting things slide. They keep us so constantly alarmed with a barrage of new things that the old crimes are never addressed. We can't let go of this one. We just can't, because they're going to do it again. You see the Daily Beast telling us, oh, we finally got this variant that's going to evade the immune system. When I was in Dallas, I was working with a company, and I haven't worked in a lot of corporate structures before. But I was just thinking, you know, if this turned into a long assignment, I wonder if I was going to have to bail because they were going to require the shot. This is still affecting people's lives, and we need to hold these people accountable. We can't do our goldfish stuff where we forget things right after they happen, because they have a way of repeating themselves. A little bit of good news here, and then I'm going to show you what's going on in the EU. And you can ask yourself here why your Congress critters, be they state or national, are not addressing these same things. The EU at least got a few fighters in there. They're pretty impotent in the EU. That is such a huge bureaucracy, and the members of the EU really don't have a whole lot of power, but at least they're standing up to this stuff. I'm going to play some EU clips in just a second, just to show you what could happen here, too, if we demanded it of our representatives. Instead, we've got a bunch of establishment hacks saying, on the Republican side, they say, well, we're not for mandates, but it's just a great accomplishment. You got Donald Trump out there saying it's still the greatest accomplishment in all of human history, and certainly of his administration, this shot. But maybe we're starting to see a little bit of piercing of this liability shield. Not on the shot yet. We haven't seen that yet, but I'm loving this story. I mean, it's a sad story, but maybe there's going to be some accountability somewhere. Before Rodney Briones, physician at Kaiser Permanente Riverside Medical Center in California, treated him with remdesivir, they allegedly did not disclose the risks to him or his wife, Christina, and did not obtain informed consent, according to a complaint filed by the Briones family. The couple had gone to the Managed Care Consortium for help after Rodney developed COVID-19 symptoms and tested positive twice for SARS-CoV-2. A 5-day course of treatment with the controversial drug and other allegedly contraindicated high-risk medications allegedly led to kidney failure for the 50-year-old Briones, who was subsequently placed on a ventilator. During this time, Kaiser Riverside reportedly refused to allow the man's wife or family to see him, and he died on September 12th. The wife, Christina Briones, said, quote, "My husband was murdered because of government bleep." I'm not sure exactly what that word is, but I could insert some there. She said, quote, "I never thought this could happen." So they are suing Kaiser Permanente and, I believe, Gilead Sciences. That's the maker of Remdesivir. And they're doing this on the basis of lack of informed consent. Now, we know a lot of people were harmed by Remdesivir, the failed Ebola drug known to cause horrific damage to people. And I would imagine if we had any honesty in our system whatsoever, and they went back and looked at, air quotes in the studio, COVID deaths, they'd find a whole lot of Remdesivir and ventilator deaths is what they would find. People that, if they had stayed home and had chicken noodle soup, would have had better outcomes than going to the hospital and being put on a ventilator or Remdesivir. But we have no honesty in our system. That will never actually come to pass, that we'll look at that in any honest way, unfortunately. But I love to see anything where somebody may be held accountable. Godspeed to the Briones family who's left after watch or standing by while the husband died. They weren't even allowed to go in and see him. I mean, it's the abuses of the medical system on the American people and people around the world, but here in America, is unparalleled. I don't think we've ever had a time where people have been subjected to worse treatment protocols and more just basic denial of human rights, which is spending time with a loved one who was on the verge of passing away. People watch their loved ones die on an iPad. Can you even imagine what that must feel like? I had a dog. I had a dog that passed away at the vet when I was on my vacation at the Bahamas when I came home. I'm actually upset about this, even recounting the story. When I came home, I was getting up in the morning, had the leash ready, was going to the vet to pick him up. I got home late Friday night. I was getting ready to go to the vet, and the vet called me and said Sadie had passed away. I was devastated that this dog, who I just loved, a very A-type person, very kind of a needy dog, but in a very, very sweet way, that she was alone at the vet when she died. It still, to this day, bothers me. I can't imagine, had that been my mother or my husband, in the case of this woman. I don't have a husband. But you know what I mean. I mean, that doctors and medical people, With a straight face, would look at someone and go, "Your relative's going to die, but you can't come hold their hand again." Nope, we're not allowing that. Can you understand what that, the kind of depravity that goes into that? You tell them, I'm willing to risk getting COVID. I don't care. I'll put on all your PPE, whatever ridiculous things you need me to go through. I just want to be with this man or woman I've been married to for 50 years. Nope, we can't allow it. I mean, this is Mengele-type stuff we're dealing with here. We cannot forget it. I'm going to play, when I come back, these clips from the EU. They're not forgetting it. There's a few members of the European Parliament. They are not forgetting it, and they're getting pretty energized about holding some people accountable for what's going on. I'll do that when we come back. Stick around. Now, I suspect that hearings that are held in the EU are probably similar to the ones here. You know, I know everybody gets excited. Oh, if there's a red wave, if the Republicans take back Senate, they're going to start holding people. Have you ever seen a perp walk out of a Senate hearing? Nothing happens. Oh, Jim Jordan is great at getting some sound bites when they have their hearings in Congress. Has anything ever happened? No. And it's probably very similar in the EU, but it's just nice to hear some people pointing out the fraud, the criminality that has gone on around what's gone on with this shot program, this experiment on humanity, this crime against humanity. And so here's a couple of these clips are long. I don't really have time to get through all of it. I wish I could. Maybe I'll keep going tomorrow or something. But the EU is starting to ask some hard questions of Pfizer, of the governments and their little secret deals with these pharmaceutical companies. They won't even allow you to see the deals over in Europe, see what's going on. I think here, the American people are so obtuse. They just do the criminality right in front of you now. They don't even care. They don't even try to hide it anymore here. In the EU, I guess they're still trying to CYA a little bit.
I was paying very close attention to everything that was said here, and I cannot hide my shock. And, you know, nobody answered concrete questions that all of my colleagues asked. We heard allegations here and statements from the representative of Pfizer stating, and I quote, that they cannot release the contracts because they have certain interests. What about the interests of the people? What about their health? Because it's our authority and our job to make sure that we get to the bottom of this. So the first question that I address to you is the following, just yes or no.
He's talking to a representative of Pfizer. Now, I believe they wanted Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer. He couldn't be bothered. The European Union has spent, I don't know, a few hundred billion dollars with Pfizer for this experimental clot shot. He couldn't be bothered to go to this hearing. But you kind of hear that tone. I think I understand why he didn't go. He didn't want to sit in this chair, so he sent one of his lackeys.
When exactly are you going to fully publish the contracts that you signed between Pfizer and the European Commission? Second question. You were mentioning the risks, and you gave us some billions of euros that your company invested in producing these vaccines. What about the health of the people who are actually put at risk by being injected with these medical products that clearly, in some cases, might have adverse effects? So the second question is, is Pfizer liable according to these secret contracts that none of us saw? So we want to know exactly. Is Pfizer liable or responsible for any adverse effects produced by your own products? Third question. Has Pfizer had access to the coronavirus before December 2019 when we knew about it? And here's the reason why I'm asking for it. The whole world found out about the COVID or coronavirus in December of 2019. On January the 11th, 2020, the Chinese government published, and I quote, the genetic data of this vaccine, of this virus. But in the data that your company submitted to EMA in order to receive marketing authorization, you provided data showing that you tested your medical product, and I quote, you started the test on January 14th, 2020. So I'm asking you, how is it possible that in 3 days, after the whole world found out the genetic data of this virus, your company already tested the vaccine on mice? Thank you.
And finally, Mrs. Zambelli.
So they're holding their feet to the fire over the, again, it may come nowhere. Rand Paul's been probably one of the most vocal here, challenging Anthony Fauci, but it's all based on gain of function. Nothing about the crime of this experiment on the American people. This is Christine Anderson. I've played several clips of her. I don't know if I have time for this one. Well, we're going to kick it off. I'll tell you what. I'm probably going to have to save this. I'm looking at these clips and realizing we don't have enough time to cover them all. This was really kind of the bombshell. This is what made the news when it comes to Pfizer and the fact that they, well, I'll let them tell you.
Regarding the question around, did we know about stopping the immunization before it's entered the market? No. We had to really move at the speed of science to really understand what is taking place in the market.
She said immunization, but what she was asked about was, did you know that this shot would not stop transmission? Did you do any testing to find out? Could you have told us that this was going to stop transmission of COVID? Pfizer did no studies in that area. Now, you had people come across the mainstream media. You had Anthony Fauci. You had the head of the CDC. You had Joe Biden out there telling you that you are, if you get this shot, you're a dead end for COVID. I believe that's a direct quote from one of these nut jobs. You're a dead end. The virus stops with you. It can't be transmitted. Turns out Pfizer never even studied whether or not it stopped transmission. It was sold as a product to stop transmission. They had no basis in that whatsoever.
And from that point of view, we had to do everything at risk. I think our Dr. Bourla, even though he's not here, would turn around and say to you himself, if not us, then who? Dr. Bourla actually felt the importance of what was going on in the world. And therefore, as a result of that, we actually spent $2 billion at risk of self-funded money from Pfizer to be able to manufacture, first of all, research, develop, and manufacture at risk.
That's ridiculous. Governments were shoving money at Pfizer in order to come out with this drug. They're trying to tell us that they put money at risk. That's an absolute joke. There was no money at risk. They were fully funded from the very beginning of this thing.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.